Welcome to Ohomani Iotaka, and we are reading Hummingbird Squash, written by Terry Lofton. And we're up to the part in the book where Hummingbird, the main character, is planning on, with her friends, planting giant vegetables. And the reason she wants to do this is in order to help feed as many people as possible. And so she's doing this for her community, as a project, a science project. And, you know, these young people, they are living their daily lives. And these are the things that they're doing. And this garden of giant vegetables is becoming a dream. It's a dream of Hummingbird's. So let's begin. As for the giant plan, Hummingbird was moving ahead. Her imagination was fired up. Hummingbird couldn't wait to get the garden going. Ariana was the first to notice that she was making plans. What are you reading? One of Aunt Chick's garden catalogs. I didn't know there were so many varieties of giant vegetables. Banging the 3-inch tomb shut, Hummingbird looked up, her eyes full of ambition. Ariana, you've got to have nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus to make the plants grow big and fast. Laughing at her own impatience, she said, but it's way too early to be thinking about that. We have to turn a dirty old shed into our experimental laboratory. The girls started with their promised partners, Rain, Boomer, and Simon. The boys helped them scrounge for all the goodies they needed, soap, mops and buckets, and a hose for the cleaning, and all kinds of hardware and attic surplus that would make the shed fit for human use. Simon also brought a 6-inch roll of bubble wrap. Where he got it and what it was for, nobody knew. But the girls weren't turning down anything. Recruiting other allies, Bird and Ariana discovered that electricity and mechanical items would not be a problem either. Boo volunteered his skills as an electrician as well as the vast contents of his junky garage. And Aunt Chick was a gold mine. She gave them all kinds of equipment and supplies, flower pots, potting soil, garden tools, seeds, and fertilizer. Even better, Tom offered to fix the fence, and Gerald, Rain's dad, was bringing his tiller. There would be a winter garden. Everybody assembled early Saturday. The kids took on most of the cleaning jobs, while Boo, Tom, and Aunt Chick started the shed and fence repair. Soon their hammering and banging was accompanied by the steady chug of the tiller's old Briggs & Stratton motor. When it jumped out of gear going over a hard spot, Gerald would just twist a couple of bolts and fire it up again. Nobody stopped except to gulp down some water. By lunchtime, the lights were on in the shed, the fence had new boards where there were none before, and dark furrows of newly turned earth waited for spade and seed. The shed wasn't exactly sparkling, but it was swept and mopped, and Boo had repaired the collapsed shelving and replaced the broken window panes with plywood. A big old table from Aunt Chick's basement now sat under the overhead lamp. On it, the girls had assembled most of their gardening products and Miss Swallow's contributions. A couple of alcohol lamps, a thermometer, an old scale, and an assortment of beakers that had seen better days. Tired but proud of their accomplishments, the giant plan work crew convened outside the shed to thank and congratulate each other on the morning's labor. Aunt Chick wanted to get the project off to a good start and had asked Tom to offer a blessing. They waited for Boo, who was still inside the shed. He was testing a space heater to make sure the electrical outlet was working safely. Not realizing he was holding things up, Boo apologized and hurried to stand respectfully with the others. Tom said, "First, I want to express my thanks to our children, who have gathered us all together to help them do something good for the people. And I want to thank the Creator for the food gifts we are about to eat. Please watch over our children as they will be working hard to plant and grow food that will help our people to eat healthier and prevent type 2 diabetes. I asked our Mother Earth and the seeds, sun, and rain to work together so that the vegetables for our people can grow in a good way. I ask these things on behalf of all our relations." Everyone smiled. It was a very good day. Aunt Chick looked around proudly at her family and friends and announced, "Darlene's got lunch on the table. Let's eat." After the morning's hard work, the grilled buffalo on wheat buns didn't last very long. After lunch, Hummingbird and Ariana thanked everyone by promising them a dish from their first giant vegetable, even though they knew that would not be possible until next summer. Boo said he was looking forward to it. He couldn't wait to carve up that 5-foot lima bean. When everyone left, Hummingbird and Ariana went back to the shed. They wanted to play in their new lab. Their first job was to inventory their materials. Hummingbird was interested in the bags of fertilizer, most of which had already been opened. Reading the labels, she saw they were either composed of inorganic chemicals or organic material that came from living things. Bird thought the organic ingredients were cool. "Look at this, Ariana. This fertilizer is made of dried blood, and this one is seagull guano. And here's some feather meal and fish meal, and a sack of crushed oyster shells. Yuck, it sounds terrible." "What's guano?" "I don't know. Look it up in Aunt Chick's garden book," Bird said, pointing to the table where Simon had piled the gardening books and a stack of internet articles on giant vegetables. Excited by so many fast-growing ingredients, Bird couldn't contain herself any longer. "Hey, let's make some fertilizer for the winter vegetables." "I don't think you're supposed to plant seeds in a lot of fertilizer," Ariana said. Simon read that it could burn the seedlings. "Oh, I think you're right, but it wouldn't hurt to see what would happen if..." Bird argued. She picked up a small unopened bag of inorganic fertilizer that said 5-10-5. 5% nitrogen, 10% phosphorus, and 5% potassium. "That doesn't sound too strong. We don't have to use much. The directions say add 1 tablespoon per gallon of water." Bird sorted through a grab box of junk that Simon brought over, finding a bunch of plastic measuring spoons. Then she filled a metal pail with water from the outside spigot, measured out a tablespoon of fertilizer, and dumped it into the water. Ariana said, "Is that all there is to it?" "Why don't we jazz it up a bit?" Bird giggled. Reaching for the organic fertilizer, she measured out a teaspoon of dried blood, feathers, fish, and shells, tossing each spoonful into the pail. Grabbing the sack of seagull guano, she turned to Ariana and asked, "What did the book say it was? I haven't looked yet." Ariana opened the book at the index and turned the pages until she got to G. Flipping to the reference page, she read, "The word guano originates from the Quechua language of the Andes and means the droppings of seabirds. Indigenous peoples collected guano from the coast of Peru to use as a soil fertilizer. It is high in nitrogen and phosphorus. The Incas assigned great value to guano, restricting access to it and any disturbance to the birds with death." "Oh, cool. Indigenous fertilizer. We've got to have some of that." Hummingbird chucked in a whole tablespoon of the guano for good measure. Now that the fertilizer was mixed, Ariana pulled down a sack of fiber peat pots and some potting soil from their newly built shelf, and Bird opened three seed packets, turnips, carrots, and cabbages. "How many should we plant?" Ariana asked. "Let's do 20 with fertilizer and 20 without. That way, if the fertilizer is too strong, we'll only lose half of them." The girls filled the fiber pots with soil, planted the seeds, and added some water to each. Ariana arranged and seeded pots in two groups of 20 on the table, and Hummingbird squirted a dropper full of fertilizer into only one group. Then she set up the plant grow light and plugged it in. A ghostly fluorescent glow filled the shed. "Gee, it looks a little spooky." "Spooky? It's not spooky. It's more like a nightlight," Bird said whimsically. "When the seeds sprout, they won't be afraid of the dark." Satisfied with their first experiment, the girls cleaned up and spilled dirt and water splatters from their seed planting. They would come back on Monday afternoon to check out the seeds' progress. Hummingbird closed the door behind them and slipped the latch in place. Unfortunately, she had forgotten the old combination lock that Dale, her brother, had given her. "At last," Coyote griped. "I thought they'd never leave. He's been hanging around at Thistle's nest all day, waiting to throw his whammy." Thistle had been out of her nest for most of the day and had now returned to nurse her new babies. Tucking her brood around her, she gave Coyote an irritated look. "What do you care when they leave?" "It's not like I don't have a schedule to keep, you know," he said pompously. "Schedule? You've been lying up here sleeping all day." "Not at all. I've been observing. Waiting for my moment. I have my plans for the winter vegetables."
"Like what?"
"Like this," he said. Coyote stood up and shook himself vigorously. Then he pranced back and forth a few times, warming up his magic. When his power was near, he reached for it quickly, transforming the girls' newly planted seeds with a little ditty. "Cabbage to Coyote, carrot to Coyote, turnip to Coyote, jinx and stinks, make them mine, make them mine." Pleased with himself, he said, "Well, Miss Birdie, let's see how your garden grows now." He reared his head back for a big laugh, but stopped. Thistle was giving him a disapproving look. "Can't you leave that poor girl alone?" "The garden doesn't have to be all mine," Coyote joked. "Actually, Thistle, you didn't let me finish. I am a very generous fellow. I fully intend to deed one of the plants back over to Hummingbird. Now pay attention." He cleared his throat. "Scratch a burr in the fur. Then the burr sticks to her. Birdie's wish becomes a dish. Some say it smells like licorice." "That's it, Mr. Big? That's the magic?" the rabbit said, not impressed. Smiling confidently, Coyote replied, "You'll believe me when you see it, and you'll agree that I'm big, very big." Waiting for the school bus the next morning, the girls were thinking and talking big too. Googling biggest vegetables on Sunday afternoon, they had found a cabbage that was 129 pounds and a carrot 19 feet long. Hummingbird boasted, "Just wait, Ariana. Next summer, we'll have a crop like that." Unfortunately, when the bus came, the girls suddenly had to think small.
It was packed with kids from another bus that had broken down. There were only two empty seats left. Hummingbird squeezed over little Deb to a window seat at the front, and Ariana moved toward an aisle seat in the back. Ariana plopped down just as the bus lurched forward. Her eyes drifted to the window, and soon she was not seeing the passing landscape. Instead, she was thinking about the shed and what was happening to the vegetable seeds they had planted. Although the girls didn't expect much progress, they planned to check out their little experiments that afternoon. Despite the intensity of her thoughts, Ariana's eyes were attracted to the sweeping hand movements of her seatmate. Oh, she thought, he's drawing. Silently, she watched him penciling in the reflection of fir branches in a mountain pond. Ariana could see that the artist knew how to draw water. Unable to keep quiet any longer, Ariana said, "That's really good. It almost looks real." The artist pushed back the cotton hood that was obscured his face and turned to Ariana. "Gee, thanks. I'm trying to get the light just right, but..." The rest of the sentence froze in his mouth. Recognizing Ariana, his jaw dropped like a stone. Ariana was equally startled. All she could see was a fireworks display of red hair. She almost hollered, "Tater tot!" Recoiling from each other, they quickly broke eye contact and stared nervously ahead. They sat like two kids on ice for several miles, while the bus seemed to crawl slower and slower. Ariana looked on ahead and saw that they were behind a truck towing the broken-down bus. "Oh, this is just great," she thought. "We'll be on this ride forever." She decided to thaw a little bit. Glancing out the corner of his eye to gauge his reaction, Ariana said shyly, "Well, you don't have to stop your drawing." Tater Tot couldn't stand the strain either. He murmured, "No, I guess not." He made some half-hearted pencil strokes, but just wasn't into it. Sighing, he shoved the colored pencils back into their box. Hearing the sigh, Ariana couldn't help but respond. It was just in her nature. "Why did you stop? You're a good artist." "Not everybody thinks so." "Then they must be crazy." "Tell that to Chris Sorrell." Ariana didn't know what to say, so she asked another question. "Why don't you draw cartoons for the newspaper?" "Yeah, well, like I said, tell that to Chris." "Well, I'm new here. I don't really know Chris." Trying to encourage the conversation, she continued, "My parents are moving here after Thanksgiving, but I'm living with Hummingbird's family right now. I came early so I could start school here at the beginning of the year." Tater Tot didn't seem to mind being drawn out of his shell. "I'm new too. I moved here last summer. My mom is a contractor for the tribe. It's just for two projects, but I should be here at least this year." Quietly, he added, "Since my parents divorced, we move around a lot." Feeling subconscious, Tater Tot broke off the conversation and stared out the window. Several minutes went by while he struggled with his thoughts. Suddenly, he turned and faced Ariana. Biting his lip, he said, "Look, I'm sorry about hollering that ding stuff at you. The principal said we had to write that apology, but I never really meant it. I didn't know about the pump and all until Miss Barry told us." "You didn't know I have type 1 diabetes?" He shook his head. "No, I was just yelling dumb stuff because somebody told me to." "But why?" Since he had started this, Tater Tot decided to plow on ahead, even though he wasn't sure why he was confiding in Ariana. "See, I've been to a lot of schools, and getting pushed around all the time really gets old. I guess I never had time to make friends or something. Anyway, when I got here, I knew it would be hard to fit in. So I thought I'd join up with the guys who do the bullying." That wasn't very smart. "No, I guess not. But it's better than getting beat up all the time." "I wouldn't know about that. I just know it didn't feel very good having everybody gang up on me. I never did anything to you." As the bus turned into the school driveway, Tater Tot realized he needed to hurry up and make his point. "No, you didn't. But that's not me, Ariana. I'm not really like that." The bus pulled into the curb and the kids started bunching into the aisles, eager to escape the overcrowded seats. Ariana grabbed her jacket and picked up her backpack. Frowning a little, she fixed her eyes on the red-haired boy and asked very simply, "So, who are you, really?" Not expecting an answer to her odd question, Ariana turned around and joined the students spilling out of the bus door. Tater Tot was right behind her. When they came down the bus steps, he saw Hummingbird waiting for her friend. Tater Tot hesitated when he saw the expression on Bird's face, but answered Ariana's question, "I'm really Larry." Ariana laughed a little. "Glad to meet you, Larry. I'm really Ariana." Glancing at Hummingbird, Tater Tot muttered, "Well, I gotta go. I guess we're all pretty late." Bird watched the embarrassed boy flee the bus stop. Wide-eyed, she turned to Ariana. "You were talking to him? What was that all about?" "Tell you later, Bird. I don't want to be late either." "Oh, come on, Ariana, tell me now. I won't be at lunch today. I've got to..." Smiling sweetly, Ariana said, "Then you'll just have to wait till after school." So we are going to quit our reading here today. Reading, of course, Hummingbird Squash. And it looks like the bully, one of the bullies, was doing it in order not to be bullied himself. So in our next reading, hopefully we're going to find out, you know, if he really does make good friends with Ariana, Hummingbird, and the rest of the crew. So once again, I want to say Pidamia to all of you listening today to our program, Ohomni Iotaka. I am your host, Donna Hawkes, and I wish you all a week full of good health and happiness. So, Doksha Ake, we will meet again. This program is made possible through funding from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting.